Hello, I'm Terrence McNally. Welcome to Free Forum, a world that just might work. I'll be speaking today with Bob Fulkerson. He's lead national organizer for Third Act, the year-old organization founded by Bill McKibben, and to mobilize boomers to pull their weight defending democracy and confronting the climate crisis. And you can learn more at thirdact.org. On Free Forum, we explore the lives, the work, the ideas of individuals that I suspect have pieces of the puzzle of a world that just might work. We look at politics, economics, environment, science, health, culture, all based on the fact that I believe we can do better, and I want to find out how. The show streams weekly on the Progressive Voices Network on TuneIn.com, and podcasts are available anytime, anywhere on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, most major podcast sites, and at my site, TerrenceMcNally.net, TerrenceMcNally.net. As anyone who listens to this show already knows, I see a number of serious crises staring us in the face, some global, some primarily in the U.S. Pandemics, public health and healthcare, gross and growing inequality in wealth and power, broken democracy and minority rule, systemic racism, tribalism, and othering, our destructive relationship with the rest of nature and the climate crisis, with climate being probably the most existential. You also know I've been talking for a few years about something I call 60s 2.0, a short and simple way to signal what I was noticing about young people and boomers. I see in millennials and younger questions, values, visions that echo the best of the 60s. But I believe they have a chance to build something deeper and more sustainable this time with the help of technology, demographics, and some cultural and social evolution. Technology makes it easier to interact with diverse others unbound by geography, to organize rapidly and efficiently, and to reduce material consumption in our daily lives. And this is notwithstanding the unique challenge of surveillance capitalism as practiced by big tech, where service is free and we are the product, and where we are manipulated at the level of neurotransmitters below our conscious ability to either detect or deter. An example of technology's value, where it took at least 4 months to organize the Vietnam moratorium, it took only hours to pull together the airport demonstrations in response to Trump's Muslim ban in 2017. Young people today, this is the second point, young people today draw on a greatly expanded talent pool. Leadership in the 60s was dominated by males, and except for race-defined organizations, overwhelmingly white. Today, we tap the genius and energy, not only of women, but of so many others whose voices were not heard at that time. The Chicago 8, for example, included one black and no women. Look at TV commercials today, especially those aimed at young people. Diversity reigns, and it's driven by the bottom line. Finally, there were maybe 100 beatniks in San Francisco and 100 in Greenwich Village, but we felt we were on our own. Today, millions of my generation and older support young people, if only from the sidelines or at their keyboards. To truly bring our numbers, resources, and power to their movements could be game-changing. Boomers are older, wiser, and richer, some of us anyway, with time to get involved. It's an opportunity for us to make good on our early promise. When I organized an intergenerational dialogue for a symposium at my Harvard 50th reunion in 2019 between members of our class and current undergraduate activists and millennials, involved in social impact, both sides seem receptive to the shared values, the threads of continuity, and the potential for partnership. When I told one young activist that I felt we in the 60s had failed, he corrected me. "You were just 50 years ahead of your time," he told me. "You didn't have the technology." A lot has gone well, and a lot has gone terribly wrong in those 50 years. But here's my vision. An energized, engaged, and effective, intentionally multi-generational alliance to take on the biggest challenges confronting us, making us able to tip things in the right direction in time. By the way, just as I began to seriously shape these ideas, I started reading about OK Boomer. My first reaction was that it was a direct rejection of the notion that we could do something together, that the failures of our generation and the likely consequences of those failures would disqualify us from being accepted as true partners. But I came to see how the epithet actually creates an opening for a realistic assessment of what we have to offer each other. My vision of 60s 2.0, boomers aligned with millennials and younger, supporting each other with strategy, communications, organizing, street actions, funding, and so on to achieve our shared goals. If the challenges we confront are big enough to divide us, then they must be big enough to bring us together. Well, while I was writing and talking about these things, others were intent on making them a reality, which brings me to today's conversation with Bob Fulkerson. As I said, lead national organizer for Third Act, a new organization with the intention of growing into a movement. In September 2021, Bill McKibben quit his New Yorker climate column to throw himself into organizing and mobilizing, specifically baby boomers and members of the silent generation. To do so, he founded Third Act, dedicated to building a community of Americans over the age of 60, determined to change the world for the better. I'm going to read briefly from their website. This is at thirdact.org. Experienced Americans are the fastest growing part of the population. 10,000 people a day past the 60-year mark. That means there's no way to make the changes that must be made to protect our planet and society unless we bring our power into play. As a generation, we have unprecedented skills and resources that we can bring to bear. Washington and Wall Street have to listen when we speak because we vote and because we have a large, maybe an over-large, share of the country's assets. And many of us have kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, and we have, in other words, very real reasons to worry and to work. Together, we will use our life experience, skills, and resources to build a better tomorrow. As I've said, Bob Fulkerson is the lead national organizer for Third Act. After serving as executive director of Citizen Alert, Nevada's first statewide watchdog organization, Bob co-founded the Progressive Leadership Alliance of Nevada, where he was executive director for 25 years. Over his long and dedicated career in Nevada, he and his organizations can count a number of significant achievements. Welcome, Bob Fulkerson, to Free Forum, A World That Just Might Work.
Thank you so much, Terrence. Great to be here.
Let me tell listeners we're recording this conversation Wednesday, February 22nd. Now, I like listeners to get a feel for the people behind the work and ideas we talk about. We have an hour, so there's time to do that. So let us know a bit about yourself, about your path. I hit some highlights, but what is your path? How do you see it to the work that you do today? You can go way back, mentors, turning points, moments of decision, that sort of thing.
Sure. I mean, basically, I'm here in Reno, Nevada, Washoe, Paiute, Western Shoshone country. I've been here. My family's been here for five generations. My dad was in the, was in Vietnam. When he was there, my mom hung a sign out from our window in Northwest Reno that said, "Give peace a chance." And I was in fourth grade. I think it was 67, and our fourth grade teacher, we had the weekly reader, and she was going around, we were talking about the war, and she said, and the weekly reader said, "Silent majority or protest?" And she said, "We're part of the silent majority." And another student in the class said, there was, somebody had a sign up that said, "Give peace a chance, they're part of protest." And I kind of cowered in the back of the room, embarrassed, like that was my mom and, my dad's over there. And I just was all confused by the whole darn thing. And so that was just my entree. So I am a boomer, but was, a young boomer. And that was my entree into like how somebody like my mom could make a statement and, how a teacher could point out something, and silence a student like that.
What grade was that again?
That was in the fourth grade.
Okay.
And so you know, growing up in the military, we were really, fairly conservative. We had to get out in Fort Lewis, Washington, 1971, when Taps was played. We'd had to get out of the car and literally salute the flag as it Taps was being played and it ran down the flagpole. I mean, some pretty, but then my dad got back from Vietnam in 71 and he resigned his commission because he turned against the war. And he, you know, I saw him cry on a number of occasions when Bush invaded Iraq. He became an anti-war activist, and we were on, you know, spoke at many of the protests that we did in the legislature in Carson City, where he slept inside a cardboard box to demonstrate that, the preponderance of homeless in Reno were veterans. And then he also bailed me out of jail when I would get arrested on military bombing ranges and said that the most patriotic thing you can do is make the military follow the gosh darn law. But he used the real expletives, you know. So I was raised right.
Wow, that's an interesting background. As we established before we got on the air, there's about 10 years difference or so between us. And so I was in those protests when you were in that fourth grade.
Thank you, Terrence. I want to thank you and everybody else that was in those protests because you helped bring my dad home.
That's right. But to hear, you know, what it was like to be, I have actually there's six kids in my family, but two of them are 12 and 14 younger than I am. So they were basically your peers, and to see what the world looked like sort of from their perspective is fascinating. And the reason you went to those moments, Bob, I assume, is because you feel that's what led you to the work you've done as an adult.
Right. Yeah. That there's like this sense of that people can have, an influence in what the hell our country's doing, they stopped a war. They brought my dad home. So, it was a good legacy to build on.
And your work that I described, how did you get into that? In other words, did you know in college, for instance, I'm going to be an organizer? I somehow doubt it. But how did that path open up for you?
I was going to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. I love kids. I love teaching. I love education. And I love Alaska. So I was going to go to Alaska and teach. And I was in I was in graduate school. I was going to go to a school up in the Aleutian Island chain and teach school and be an Alaskan, I guess. And what happened was I was working on the nuclear weapons. I'd worked on the nuclear weapons freeze in 1982 and became, was working a lot on, volunteering on that. And then the Cranston for President campaign called me somehow and said, "We got your name from nuclear weapons freeze list. We'd like you to... Are you interested in, going to the White House when we win? Because, we're going to win and you can go to the White House." And I was 23 and I said, hell yes. So put me to work. And so I went to Council Bluffs, Iowa and lived there for 6 months. And I quit grad school and I just decided to do that instead. And while I was there, I got a call from the organization that I had volunteered for to do the nuclear weapons freeze work and to fight against the MX missile that I'd been volunteering for. They said their director was leaving. Would I like the job? And I said, well, how much does it pay? And they said it paid $12,000 a year, but we don't have health insurance. And I said, that's a hell of a lot of money. I'm going to take it. But they said, well, we have to interview you first. So, I did the interview and they hired me.
Wow. And how old are you at that point? You're 22, 23?
I was 23. Yeah.
Wow.
And
share, by the way, one parallel in our lives. In 1972, at the age of 24, I went to work for the McGovern campaign and ended up on the national staff of the McGovern campaign. So 10 years later or whatever, you're doing the same thing for Cranston.
You know, but before that, I had worked, I was Republican. You know, growing up in the Army, I had to come and register to vote when I was 18. Oh. So I registered Republican. I went to school in Washington, D.C., and I worked for Ronald Reagan. I worked for Paul Waxall, and then I volunteered for the Reagan for President campaign in 1980. So, I mean, you spent your youth doing good stuff. I spent my youth doing some not so good stuff. Yeah.
Well, it has to do with where we grow up and things like that. But you've changed. You've changed, or you've helped, you've contributed to change the area you grew up in.
Yeah, yeah. This area that I've grown up in has changed significantly. Thank God for Californians for immigrants, you know, because otherwise Washoe County here in Nevada, it's an inbred, you know. Yeah, we need these outsiders, boy.
Well, we're certainly supplying plenty of them. I hear a lot of them are going to Texas. They've got a long road to travel there to change things.
Oh, boy, I'll say.
So you became director of this organizing organization. Did you have any, because I know you're now in the organizing role in Third Act, did you have any, or what were your trainings in organizing? Was it just learning on the job, or Heather Booth's Midwest Academy, or you get where I'm going? Where does one?
Sure. No, it's really, I mean, back then, so this was 1984, and you know, there was no internet, there were no cell phones, there was, I inherited a membership list of about 140 people, and they were on index cards, 3x5 index cards, in a hot chocolate box.
Of course,
and
they were.
Yeah, and like, you know, this person donated $25 in March of, you know,
yeah,
1980, you know, kind of thing, and then all their little, written down on the back of that card, and and it was a lot in the, you know, on the job training. But then, yeah, so I was hired in March of 84. In June of 84, I got invited to go to Boise, Idaho for a Midwest Academy training at the University of Idaho. And I went there, and it was Jackie Kendall and Steve Max, who were Heather Booth, were at the Midwest Academy. And we learned about strategy and about targeting, about base building, and about developing leaders. We watched a movie. God, what was that old movie with Will Gear in it, about the mining town in New Mexico that has all of the intersectionality in there of immigration, of domestic violence, of women's liberation, of worker rights. It was Blacklisted. Anyway, I can't remember. We watched that.
I can't remember it either. Yeah.
Really made an impact on me. And then I had mentors here in Nevada, like Maya Miller. Maya was the incubator for all of the anything progressive that happened to Nevada happened because of Maya Miller. And she was a philanthropist, and she was a women's rights activist. And she had a ranch, quote unquote, out here in northern Nevada. And that was the place where activists, organizers, people kind of on the outside could go and talk to each other and learn about what other people like in other parts of the state were trying to do in order to wrestle it away from those that just wanted to use it as their own personal cash register.
Sure.
And Maya was, yeah, so she, I was lucky to have a great mentor like her. And then there was a bunch of folks in the Bay Area. I mean, you know, doing all of our anti-nuclear weapons work and everything and anti-nuclear weapons testing protests and stuff. The center of that was, you know, Livermore Action Group.
Sure.
It was the things that were in San Francisco. The Quakers would go to Friends Meeting House in San Francisco, learn from David Hartso, who was a great Quaker trainer who taught me about nonviolence. And so I learned a lot from the activists in the Bay Area, and I continue to still go there for my inspiration.
Sure.
And I was just there,
sure,
on an art build with David Solnit a couple of weeks ago, as a matter of fact.
Very good. Let's shift. Let's transition into Third Act. And I'm going to ask it this way. So you've led an organization that fought the federal government on single issue campaigns. That was one of your organizations. Then you worked another to change the landscape of one particular state, your home state of Nevada. And you've now taken a lead role with an organization that is created to build a successful national movement. What are some of your thoughts about how you approach this and why you wanted to take on Third Act?
Well, I would tell you that all of my career, you know, in doing this since 1984 has brought me to this day. And it is just the best job I've ever had. Being a lead organizer is the best title I've ever had in my life. I guess the thing that I'm finding remarkable is not only it's the numbers of people, of elders, who have no axe to grind, no prejudices or no hidden agendas other than wanting to go out right and wanting to make sure that when they leave, you know, they've done all they could to set things right. And so we have people that have written, you know, we have authors like, you know, our Los Angeles group is run by somebody that wrote a book on leadership coaching. There's and people who have been editors for Time Magazine. There's the guy that ran the foreign languages department at, you know, Columbia for 30 years. Just a huge amounts of people from across the spectrum like that who only want to contribute to Third Act's success. And what a gift. I remember in the 80s where we'd have to knock on doors to get 50 members in 4 months was a big deal. And, you know, we're getting that many all the time at Third Act just by turning on the computer. It's the scale that we're developing here is remarkable. And
that sounds great. And one thing you said there that struck me is you said, because they've had their families and they're empty nesters now and they've achieved their careers and maybe they've got financial security, that once they turn their attention to positive change, there's no drag on the engine. It's full speed ahead.
Yeah. And the fact that they have time right now, that there isn't, this isn't something that they have to do between college and law school. It's not something that they have to do after an exhausting 14-hour day and then come home and take care of all the kids. And then I'm going to work for Third Act. This is something that, you know, mainly people are retired and they have time. And that is such a treasure chest that we can tap into.
And I have a number of ways of looking at this, but one thing that I was thinking of in terms of the value of Third Act was our national epidemic of loneliness, the need for people, perhaps especially seniors, to have a feeling of purpose and meaning and so on. It seems like this also fills a sort of a unique need for the people that are getting involved as well.
Well, I mean, you nailed it. And the level of social isolation and all the research showing that leads to bad health outcomes. We die sooner and we get sick faster if we're staying at home. And, you know, this epidemic of a lack of friends is also something that's alarming. And that, you know, 1 in 7 men don't even have a friend. And that's from 1 in 20, 40 years ago. And that also leads to bad health outcomes. And so these working groups that we're creating by bringing elders with common affinities together, or in the same regions together, and then they're building their own structures and their own working groups, and so they're connecting socially, and they're also leaning into the talents and the wealth of ideas that they've amassed in that 40, 50 years of on the job.
Sure, sure. What is, I sort of laid it all on Bill McKibben's realization, as he shared with me in that interview back in October 2021, and in writings that he's done, that he realized that the young people, enough of them, a critical mass, was participating and making a difference, and that we, boomers, 60 and older, weren't pulling our weight. Do you have any other things to add to what I would call Third Act's origin story?
Well, I mean, I can tell you how I got involved, but I'm not sure about all the machinations that Bill had and talking to different people and, you know, kind of like where the, you know, where the, you know, where the zygote hit the egg or anything like that. I'm not really privy to all that.
Okay. Okay.
But, yeah.
I'll shift then. I noticed that Akia Winwood, who leads your volunteer advisory staff, she was formerly president of Rockwood Leadership Institute for many years, and I've interviewed folks from Rockwood in the past. Can you talk a bit about the culture that you hope to create at Third Act
and this mix
of personal, organizational, social?
No, I think that's a great question. One of the things that attracted me to Third Act was Akia, and was because I'm a graduate of the Rockwood year-long, you know, Leading from the Inside Out program. And, you know, until I went through that Rockwood program in 2007, I was on the path to becoming a burned out, angry organizer that thought it was super important for me to be right and to convince you I was right. And if that group was not doing it quite right, it was up to me to hunt them down and to tell them why they were doing it wrong. You know, and at Rockwood, I learned that leadership is an inside job, and it's much better to make converts than it is to hunt heretics as an organizer. And then how do you do that? Well, you got to take a look at within, you know, and you know, I realized how pissed off I was all the time. And, you know, and I had some personal demons with alcohol, the alcoholism and everything to face down. And what the Rockwood culture talks about organizing and movement building as relationship building, not as a series of steps that we have to take in order to win. It's about relationship building first and foremost. And if we don't, at Third Act, we spend a lot of time on culture setting and relationship building. What draws you to Third Act? We do one-on-ones, and we encourage all of our members to do one-on-ones. It's an old Midwest Academy organizing trick. It's like dental floss. Organizations are not doing the one-on-ones. So we do that, and what brings you to Third Act? What is it about your being, you know, at the end of your life that makes this a special time for you and a more meaningful time? And people have those conversations and get to know each other a lot better and create these stronger bonds and relationships with each other. And so then when it comes down to planning the actions, to planning the day-to-day stuff, we could do it with a lot more creativity and kindness, because we center kindness in everything we do. And part of that, I think, comes from being old. I thought it was like my duty to be a pissed off activist.
That's
kind.
Right.
You want me to be kind? That's for the bourgeoisie.
Right, right. Isn't there that thing, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And, you know, absolutely, I still lean into anger, and that's really important. But I think part of our thing about getting older is kind of let that go. We don't have to lead with that anymore. And that's really liberating and freeing and opens up. But so then what do you lean into? Well, kindness. And we have to center that. And I wasn't too down on this kindness thing because there's people I don't like and I don't think I should be kind to them. And then Bill said, I heard him say once, in a world where everybody is so mean to each other, being kind is mildly subversive.
Ah, I love that.
That worked for me.
Yeah. Oh, so now he dressed it up in something you could wear. Let me tell people, this is Free Forum, a world that just might work. I'm Terrence McNally. I'm speaking with Bob Fulkerson, lead national organizer for Third Act, the year-old organization founded by Bill McKibben, to mobilize boomers to defend democracy and confront the climate crisis. And you can learn more at thirdact.org. Very good. Let me ask, how do you see Third Act's goals? Because it sounds, and let me throw in a little here. It sounds to me like part of the goal, otherwise one wouldn't spend as much time on culture, as you've just indicated, is actually to fill a need in the people who are involved, which is great. But in terms of 5 years from now, if we say Third Act is being successful, what will that be? And one of the questions I have there, and it's one of the ones that I asked Bill when I first encountered Third Act, is how much beyond climate? Because as I said in my intro, I see about 5 or 6 really critical crises that we face. So, what are the goals and how do they stretch beyond climate?
Well, you know, the goal is to mobilize our demographic to get out of our comfort zones. You know, a lot of us, you know, been home and back out into the streets, frankly. Mm-hmm. And so if we, but also knowing, like, my mom isn't going to go back out into the streets, but there is still a role for her to play, you know, at Third Act. So how can we get everybody that wants to get involved and let them know that they still have a job to do, no matter if they're, you know, if they can leave their home or not?
Mm-hmm.
One of the goals is to retain the people who come to Third Act. You know, we've hooked them. But how do we land them? How do we keep them there? So, you know, at the end of 5 years, it's going to be really important that we have seen our leaders continue to engage with Third Act and not leave and not go somewhere else, and that we've built a much stronger base. I don't know if we're going to win the climate finance battle in 5 years or not. But that is certainly a goal as well.
In other words, I see that actions that have already taken place in the first year and the upcoming action, which the day of action on 3/21/23 is focused on finance. Bill was either the founder or one of the founders of 350.org. People probably know, which I don't think it was intentionally a youth organization, but it was certainly dominated by younger people, partly because one of its main strategies was college university divestment. But it, 350, used divestment of university pensions and university endowments and so on to get them to divest from the fossil fuel industry. And it was a really excellent organizing tool and one by one, they succeeded with a lot of the big institutions in America. And now I see Third Act is again sort of tweaking that, but going with that same thing. Talk about that, about the role of finance and disinvestment and those sorts of things in Third Act and in the climate battle.
Sure. So, I mean, in order to like affect the big changes that we need to make rapidly, it does not look like, you know, the Congress of the United States is going to, you know, build back better, and the Inflation Reduction Act are going to be it for a long time. So if we're not focusing our efforts on Congress and in Washington, then where do we go? Well, we go to the state level, because there's a lot of good stuff happening at the state level in places like California, and, you know, and or the city level. We have some great, you know, controllers like in New York, who are disinvestment, you know, or you attack the funders of the machine of the fossil fuel industry, which are the big four banks, and our, you know, demographic, the boomers, you know, we've got the money, we've got the assets in these banks. They have to listen to us, because we're the ones that can shut them down if enough of us get together, and we can tear their brand down. They're really working hard. They spend like $1,000 per new credit card user trying to attract new people. So tearing down the brand of Chase and Wells Fargo for the fact that they're profiting off of burning down our forests, and don't get your credit card with them, that does a lot of damage to them, you know? So, I mean, you know, we joke around. I mean, one of my goals I just really want to see Jamie Dimon, you know, break down in tears over what the hell he's done. And on our National Day of Action, which is coming up on the 21st
of March,
you know, coming right up. That's what we aim to do, and that's shaping up to be one of the largest climate action finance actions in history, and it's really exciting to see.
Let me say a couple of things to that. One is that if you've been hearing about breaking up with your bank, moving your money, and I think that movement kind of started after the 2008-09 financial crisis, in terms of how they handled subprimes and so on, and has continued ever since, and now, as we know, is a main thrust of Third Act. If you've been meaning to do it and so on, and you just haven't done it, don't just do it tomorrow. What you can do if you align yourself with Third Act is do it at the same time millions of others are doing it, so the message doesn't get lost. So in terms of the Day of Action 321-23, is it to do it that day? Is it to do it that week? If someone listening right now goes, okay, I'm going to do it, I'm finally going to do it, when should they do it?
Yeah, do it that day. Don't do it now. Don't do it now. The pledge is still active. You can go to thirdact.org and sign the pledge that says that you will do it if they don't divest. So go ahead and sign that pledge. And then on the 21st, that's the day that people can move their money and cut up their cards.
Yeah. I mean, if that really happens at some significant level, that will be news. And let me also say that the website we've even mentioned, thirdact.org, has a lot of resources. So it doesn't just say change banks. It has advice on sustainable investing. It has advice on how to choose a credit card. It has advice on how to break up with your bank and do it smoothly. Talk a little bit more, if you will, about the resources people can find. You know, there's the step of actually joining a local working group. I'm part of the Southern California Third Act Working Group, and there's probably a working group where you are, and if not, you can start it. But if you're not quite there, but you want to learn, what are some of the resources available?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's a great website called bank.green. So it's just B-A-N-K, you know, period green. And you can find the best green banks in your area from that website. So that's a great resource. And I would definitely start there. You know, we're not talking, there's other groups that are working on pensions and your investments and things like that. Third Act is specifically honing in on your assets, your credit cards, and your assets in these banks. So just to want to make that
but I'm saying, as I looked at the resources on the website, there is sections that will help you with those other things as well. If only it means directing you to other resources, it does seem that someone can go to your website and learn a great deal about those other aspects as well.
We have had, and depending on how you learn, if you learn by reading, you can go to the website and read about that, our toolkits. If you do better from like watching or listening, then there are videos that you can watch and read about how you can invest, where you can, how you can move your money, what the key issues are, all that stuff. It's a whole series of tools and resources there.
Right. There's webinars. There's articles. There's blogs. There's actions. There's local groups. There's lots of ways to learn. Lots of ways to get involved. Lots of ways to take your impulse to become part of this movement and make it a reality.
Yeah.
Third Act has recently had, I think, its first year birthday. What have you learned in the year? What lessons have you learned?
Yeah, we had our first big national call December 7th, 2021, had our big birthday party December 7th, 2022. And I would say that the biggest lesson that I've learned is to try to keep expectations a little bit lower in terms of what I as an organizer can deliver to people, you know? And because the expectations of Third Act when we first started was that, I mean, we said, we're going to help you. I'm going to help you start these working groups, and I'm going to help you organize groups in your area. So email me and I can help you do that. And got in, you know, thousands of emails from people. And it was a fire hose of interest. It's a really good problem to have.
Right, right. That's a good news, bad news, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So what we learned is that the need to set up systems, because a lot of this is done digitally. And so setting up those digital systems that help to, that help us to respond to people's needs quicker. And
sure. In other words, at first you don't know how much demand there's going to be for what you're offering.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so we had just this fire hose of interest.
Right.
And then, you know, and then our methodology to set up working groups, we had kind of a pretty good formula worked out. And then we had to make some course corrections on the way.
It's the life of any startup, isn't it?
Oh boy, I'll say, and yeah, and it got, you know, and it's not as intense as it was like January, February, 2022 or 2020. Yeah, it got really, really intense there for a while. And, The but now that we have more staff and we have more systems that are set up, things have been calming down a little bit internally, at least in my own internal. I'm able to sleep better at night. Let me just put it that way.
Very good.
Because I'm not. We can respond better to these beautiful, talented third act leaders that say, "Hey, I want to help. I emailed you. I haven't heard from you, and you know, in so long, you know." So, I just learned how crucial it is to respond to them in a quick way, and to set up the systems to do that.
Okay, let me ask you a couple of other questions about the whole notion of third act, though. Third Act is specifically focused on mobilizing those 60 and over. It's been pretty clear to me from the start that to succeed, it's going to have to be part of a multi-generational movement. How are you guys dealing with that? And how do you link up with younger people and other organizations in that aspect?
Yeah, you know, that's so crucial, and I spent a lot of time thinking about this. You know, one way, in fact, we're going to be I'm developing a program for our leaders on building strategic collaborations at the local level with youth and frontline and Black, Indigenous, people of color communities. And a whole political education and training module around that, because what happens, is a lot of time, you know, the baby boomers, you know, we take up a lot of space. Let's just put it that way. When we come into these rooms where there's a lot of young people, a lot of times, well, you know, we're going to get the pronouns wrong. I sometimes get my own pronouns wrong. So, I mean, I just started using they, them about 6 months ago, and I get my own ones wrong. So I can't, like, anyway, so we old people, we're going to get those things wrong sometimes.
There's a certain set of skills and sensitivities and nuances to pulling together disparate generations, and I think it's crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we at Third Act want to do is to bring new people into the movement, into the climate and democracy movement. So not people who are already involved, but new people who are over 60, who then we can put in service to these youth organizations. You know, they're the ones. So if you're doing a big voter registration drive, we've got 50 volunteers at Third Act Nevada. Put us to work.
Because it still is the case that most of the, or a lot of the most active change organizations, when they mobilize, are mobilizing young people. I think that's probably the case, right? It has to do with them being in college. It has to do with them not having quite the same responsibilities and those sorts of things. When I laid out my vision in the introduction, Bob, and I said, you know, the various things, strategy, funding, action on the streets and so on, I can see that there's different people and different groups that are going to be able to supply those different things, but the combination of all of them is what's needed.
Yeah, and that's the that's also, you know, and I don't know if we need, you know, like, we can't, like, come in as third actors and wag our fingers about strategy to the young folks, like the Sunrise or things like that. I think what we have to do is come in there and in a supporting role, mm-hmm. and not to interrogate those strategies as much as be supportive in work that they're already doing. The danger that we boomers have, and that's where OK Boomer came up, was that we do a lot of finger wagging, you know?
Yeah.
We do.
In my day, we...
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I also wonder whether, you know, I think probably at its best, it's a kind of mysterious alchemy, because I think, you know, one could end up not offering enough, you know? I mean, it's, you get what I'm saying. I think it's,
yeah,
it's very subtle. What, I mean, someone, you know, who you're in a group that's fully energized and doing things. And I'm just suggesting, and someone who's was an organizer in their youth remembers some lessons. Well, that's helpful, but it's how you do it and how it feels and all of those sorts of things, which goes back in a way to some of that stuff we talked up earlier about the culture and the culture being about relationships, that it's not about what you know, just what you know or what you've experienced, but it's about the relationships you're building in that moment.
Right. And our leaders, when they go through our, you know, become part of Third Act, are steeped in that kind of value and in that kind of a culture, so that when it does come time to standing with youth communities, we're able to do that in a good way, as opposed to in a, you know, paternalistic way, or
right.
Here's
right.
how to do it.
Right.
No, I think one of the things that I hated hearing the most as a young organizer when I was like 24, always hear my mentors were always 10 years older than me.
Sure.
So they were the ones that were active in the 60s. And the thing they would always say was, in the 60s, ...
Yeah.
I got so sick and tired of hearing that. Although now I really love to hear more about it, because I'm, you know.
I understand. Well, yeah, I the ability to hear that changes over time too.
You're right.
Person, as they mature, they go, oh, wait a minute. You know, yep. I mean, maybe they had something, maybe, you know, that sort of thing. We've got about 5 more minutes. Lay out again so that people get it clear. If you're new, if you're a listener and you are new to the notion of Third Act and specifically the Day of Action, March 21st, lay out what steps they can take to get involved and make a difference.
Beautiful. Go to thirdact.org and sign up on our page for our National Day of Action. And on that page, you can do a couple things. One, you can find an action that's near you. There's a map that shows all the 70 plus actions in the 40 states that we are, the 24 states that we have so far. Or you can create your own action and put a dot on the map and say, I want to do an action here. Our idea about this is we're not looking for these big bi-coastal, you know, a million people in New York or whatever. We're looking for more decentralized actions spread out all across this big, beautiful country. And every community has at least one of these banks in it. So there's a place, there's absolutely room for everybody to get involved here.
Okay. So now, and what about these local working groups? So one thing is I go to the website. I've heard this. I go to the website and I take the pledge. What about the local working groups? Are they all, will I click my location and find out whether there is one and then who to reach and all of that sort of thing?
Yeah. There's a big black button that says get involved on our website, and you can either, you know, sign up for an email to take action. One of the options is join a working group, and if you join a working group, it'll take you to a map, and we have working groups across the country that are formed or in formation in these geographic areas. So Third Act Southern California, Third Act Bay Area, Third Act Sacramento, Third Act Nevada, and by affinity. So Third Act lawyers, Third Act, and Third Act creative. A lot of artists coming now to Third Act and forming a working group, which is really exciting.
And you guys have had an event that was linking art and activism?
Yeah, we did. We did in fact, art is a huge part of our National Day of Action, and song and creativity. And so we did a big art build in the Bay Area in Richmond at David Solnit, who's a the premier climate arts activist that I met at the test site 30 years ago.
And, that's so great.
Did it. Yeah, did a giant, had people there from all over the country, Third Act elders, learning how to create street art and also learning songs and bringing song back into our spaces. And it was really liberating and fun.
So if I'm going there and I take the pledge, I read about the March 21st, and now I go, do I get myself involved in a working group, or is that going to ask too much of me? How does that work in terms of when you sign up? What are you signing up for? How diverse can your contribution be relative to someone else's?
So you can join a working group whether you have an hour a year or an hour a day. The idea is absolutely everyone has a role to play at Third Act and in these working groups. And the way that the working groups are structured invites people to use the talents and the what makes their hearts sing.
Sure.
And inject that into the working group. The challenge is to make sure that everything's in alignment, though, because we don't want to just have a lot of noise out there. People, this group doing a big vegan dinner, this group doing a... I'm going to, cut down on methane, grazing, in Elko, Nevada, and this group doing something else. We really need everybody to be aligned, or it'll be like one hand clapping. And so that's why fealty to the Third Act mission of climate finance and democracy within these working groups is also real crucial.
Okay. And let me just say, the reason that he mentions climate activism and democracy is that those are the first two big issues. As I said, it's not strictly just climate, but we realize that democracy is in danger. Democracy needs support, expansion, energy, and so on. So it's both of those are so far the focuses of it. You can learn more about Third Act and their March 21st Day of Action to Stop Continued Investment in Fossil Fuels at thirdact1word.org. For this conversation and many other interviews and articles, to join me in pursuit of a world that just might work, go to terrencemcnally.net, terrencemcnally.net, or aworldthatjustmightwork.com. They're the same website. If you want to receive my weekly email announcement telling you who's going to be on, what we're going to talk about, and usually links to probably 10 articles to kind of flesh out the conversation, you can sign up at my site, or you can email me at T-E-McNally, T-E-M-C-N-A-L-L-Y, at mac.com. You can also subscribe and listen to the Freeform podcast at Apple Podcasts and most podcast sites. You can find years of podcasts at my site or those others. Listen anytime, anywhere. Michael Lewis, Naomi Klein, Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Connie Rice, Greg Boyle, George Packer. You can also follow me on Twitter, at McNally Terrence. Thanks to Kiana Williams in production, George Vassilopoulos at Progressive Voices, and most of all to you, my listeners, please share this podcast widely. Thank you, Bob Fulkerson.
Well, thank you, Terrence. It was a real pleasure today.
Keep up your good work.